the Good News Station.
This is USA Radio News. I'm J.J. Jeffries. It's an offer that could set a precedent for negotiating with the Islamic State group. Jordan says it's willing to release an Iraqi woman prisoner who was involved in deadly hotel bombings a decade ago if the militants release a Jordanian pilot they've been holding since December. The militants have threatened to kill the pilot and a Japanese man they're holding. Jordan, in the past, has taken a hardline approach toward Islamic militants, but the government is facing domestic pressure to bring the pilot home. New Englanders are continuing to dig out from a blizzard that left more than 2 feet of snow in some spots. One woman struggling to free her car south of Boston says her snowblower broke down a couple of times because it couldn't handle all the snow. But overall, the region appears to be bouncing back. Officials were well prepared for the storm. For the USA Radio Network, I'm J.J. Jeffries.
Safety for your home and family. Now that's important to you. And Gator Security, with its 5-year warranty, can help. With security, video surveillance, and access control, Gator Security is available at www.gatorsecurity.com or 800-676-1580. Gator Security, with its 5-year warranty, is a proud corporate sponsor of WCNO. GatorSecurity.com.
Godfrey Electric is a fourth-generation, full-service electrical contractor serving St. Lucie, Martin, Palm Beach, and Broward counties. Godfrey Electric specializes in industrial, commercial, and residential electrical service work. Godfrey Electric, an underwriter of the WCNO Ministry, is available on the web at www.godfreyelectric.com or at 561-833-3753.
The president's immigration policies have been defended today on Capitol Hill by the woman he's nominated to be the next attorney general. Under challenges from Republicans, Loretta Lynch defended the decision to shelter millions of immigrants from deportation even though they live in the country illegally. At her Senate confirmation hearing, Lynch said that under the administration's policy, the Department of Homeland Security is focused on removing the most dangerous of the undocumented immigrants among us. On another controversial issue, Lynch said current intelligence gathering programs by the National Security Agency are constitutional and effective. Mitt Romney is renewing his pledge to fight for the poor and middle class in a speech that questions Democrat Hillary Rodham Clinton's foreign policy and economic credentials. The 2012 Republican presidential nominee will appear at Mississippi State University Wednesday night. This is USA Radio News.
West of Old England, a WCNO corporate underwriter, has the best in equestrian and western wear from head to toe for both horse and rider. They are your Wrangler, Pro Rodeo, and Horseman headquarters with an expanded women's department. Also an expanded boot department with Georgia, Justin, and Wolverine boots. West of Old England is located in the Bruner Plaza, 650 Southeast Monterey Road, halfway between US 1 and Canner Highway. West of Old England.
Tuesday saw the Obama administration open up the possibility for more oil drilling in Atlantic coastal waters. USA's Cub Buning has more.
While the White House looks to protect energy-sensitive environments like the Arctic, oil rigs could begin popping up along the American Atlantic coast. Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey does not see the advantage, at least not for the majority of Americans.
Drilling in the Atlantic is a risk-reward proposition. All of the risk is put on the backs of our shore communities, and all of the reward goes to big oil.
Menendez's senatorial colleague from Massachusetts, Ed Markey, sees the negative impact this type of drilling could have on already established and successful industries in the area.
Why should we run the risk to the fishing industry, to the tourism industry on the East Coast, when this oil is probably destined for exploitation outside of our own country?
While the plan does open up for drilling in the Atlantic, it does put even further restrictions in the fragile waters of Alaska's North Slope. I'm Cub Buning.
A baby caiman has found a new home at a Lithuanian zoo after its previous owner tried to sell it online. Apparently, upon realizing that the pet reptile he was raising in his bathroom wasn't a harmless lizard. Officials at the Canis Zoo said authorities confiscated the spectacled caiman from a student who had posted an online advertisement for a large lizard. I'm J.J. Jeffries.
Good news and shoes. It's Jesus in the everyday, me and you. The good news and shoes.
This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Well, I guess I'm supposed to talk now. Is that the point?
That's the point. That's the reason you're here,
Joe. Can we ever stop you?
You have stopped me cold in my tracks.
Really?
Every time you give me a bill, I'm like, oh.
Well, excuse me.
This is the Team Martech Hour, 1-888-221-8990, 1-888-221-8990, and you can call us, and we will answer your questions, and Pastor Tom will shake his head and say, Joe, haven't I taught you anything yet in what you're supposed to say and not say on this show?
And is that what I would say?
Kind of.
Kind of, sort of?
Normally you just shake your head, right? The wrong way. You're shaking at the other. That's better. the circular motion, what he's saying.
At a 45-degree angle. You don't know whether to say yes or no. And
the twitch. Just so you know, folks, we started doing these radio shows about 10 or 11 or 12 years ago. We're not sure when. Dan Warren said today, he says, Joe, just say we're in our second decade. He says, that sounds pretty impressive.
Yeah, as a radio show.
Second decade. So the concept
is still youngsters.
Oh, yeah, right.
I don't know about Joe, but
when I got kids that have their AARP card, this is pretty hard to pull that one off, you know. But
you have a child that's of age to be part of AARP.
Don't you love that? Yeah, yeah. How about two?
Wow,
scary, isn't it?
It is scary.
Well, you know,
I didn't think you were that old.
Well, that 56 Buick backseat got me in trouble. I'm just telling you.
Life in the fast lane back in the 50s. Oh,
Pastor Tom.
He's turning red.
I know. He's red and pink and orange, and now he's just falling apart on me real quick here. Well, let me just tell you this, folks. Just so you know, Joe Martech became a born-again Christian in 1982. I was dunked in that tank in front of 300 people or 400 or 500, and a pastor promised it would be warm water. Well, he didn't lie. It wasn't real warm.
Was it real warm?
It wasn't real warm.
You're supposed to be numb when you get in there.
But I do want you to know, Pastor Tom, that the last time I walked on water, it was frozen.
Good.
Just so you know, if anybody ever in the world said, Joe, you're a perfect person, that isn't what they say. They added other words in there. But I won't tell you what those words are. But people have heard those words.
That's something to do with you go fishing and you do that.
There's different things.
You drill something into the ice?
Yes. There we go.
Ice fishing.
Here, on the other hand, is what happened. I'm a financial advisor called a stockbroker. I'm a securities principal, lots of licenses. I've got about 900 clients basically here on the Treasure Coast and in 13 other states because people move and whatever. But if you're a credible professional, you align yourself with other credible professionals because there's no way in the world any one person can know everything. Secondly, what I never wanted to do was to have one person in charge of this whole house of, quote, professionals, and I've seen people do that. But I've always felt that the best people did not work for somebody. They worked for themselves. So they ended up starting their own practice of one kind or another. So about 10, 11, 12, 13 years ago, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, Greg Fasula, attorney, and Joe Martech, financial advisor, started doing these shows. Then over a period of time, We had to get rid of a few CPAs because, you know, you can't always trust those guys. You
can't trust them.
So we found, you know, how do I phrase that properly? A CPA that used to teach college.
But not at Columbia.
And the other side of the criteria, seriously, was I had to find people that were not new in business. Now, the reason for that is if you're new in business, if there's a time you're going to make mistakes, that's usually when you do it. The longer you're in business, and especially in the same area, the more worried you get about making any kind of mistake and your credibility and your integrity. So I wanted people that have been in business a long time. So I think the least amount of time anybody that I know of in our group is 20-some years. Dan is like 35 years. You're 140 years, aren't you, Vince?
a little bit less than that, but not much.
Not much, right? So the concept was to put together a CPA, and Vince happens to be not only a CPA, but he's a forensic CPA, and he did teach at the university level. We also have Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, who's only been in the real estate business since 1980, probably the hardest working person alive, most knowledgeable, credible, comes to short sales, foreclosures, all the words that you hear, even if you don't know what they mean, she's the person. Mike Paulus, mortgage broker, if you ever need to get a mortgage, somebody needs to understand how any of the mortgages work. And all of us will talk to you on the phone. You don't need to come and sit. You don't need to give us money. We help people whenever we can to achieve their goals. It's a pretty simple thing. So clearly what I'm trying to do is help people with IRAs, with different types of IRAs, with rollovers. If it's a 401k, I try to help people with moving from their one broker to another if they're not happy with them, to show them what they can do, or show them different types of investments. There's no such thing as one saddle fits everybody. You know, everybody is a little bit different. So we want to find out. And today, I wanted to talk about two things. Because we are getting into what's called tax season. You know, this is January.
Not getting into,
we're actually in it. Right? Are getting there. In fact, they've, a lot of them have received their
1099. I've got about a half a dozen in already, in-house.
Yeah, yeah. W-2s are done. You know, and it's that time. And the second thing is, we'll talk about taxes and we'll talk about businesses. Some of the things that we take for granted because we do it every day, and talking about taxes and businesses, Vince, let's just say right this minute, Joe Martek says, okay, Vince, I want to start a new business. First question you're going to say is, okay, Joe, what kind of business?
Yes, there's an interview process.
Okay, so let's just play it. Let's just play it. Yeah. Can we role play? Okay, Vince, I want to start a new business.
And what kind of business is this?
Well, I think what I want to do is open up a garage, and I'm going to fix cars. And I'm just going to do it by myself, and I'm probably going to end up with one employee.
One employee by yourself, no partners. Who's going to own the company? You?
Me, 100%.
Well, then we'd probably look at the type of entity we should set up for that type of business, whether it be an S corporation or an LLC. And those are the two most popular ones right now. Don't have to be. There's partnerships and there's C corps, but basically S corps or LLCs is what we'd look at.
Now, why wouldn't I just run it in my name, period, only all by myself?
Well, Joe, to do that, you expose yourself to potential liability, because when you don't incorporate yourself, if you're self-employed, when I say self-employed, it's bad, sole proprietor,
right,
I should say. As a sole proprietor and without a corporate entity, if somebody comes in your garage, slips and falls and breaks their neck, and you don't have enough insurance policy coverage for that, anything that's paid in excess of what you're covered on the insurance, anything that's claimed, you might be responsible personally for that. So what you do is, to protect yourself, a lot of people, particularly in that type of business you're talking about, would incorporate for the liability protection, for starters.
Okay.
And that's so, one of the main reasons for it.
All right. So if I did, so there's two choices here that jump out at me. One would be an S corp, which basically means things just pass through on a normal basis. I don't know how to phrase that properly.
Well, it's very simply, a pass-through entity is a reporting entity only, meaning that the company will report revenues, expenses in a normal fashion, come up with a profit.
Right.
Well, the company or the corporation doesn't pay tax on the profit. It's a reporting entity only in most cases. There are exceptions. Or then the rest of it passes through to the owners, to the owners, usually the shareholders.
Right.
And so it's done on an S-corp. It's done pro rata.
So but I'm the sole proprietor.
Well, then you get 100% of everything. So let's say you had this garage business, you grossed $250,000, after your expenses, you netted down to $50,000.
So then I'd pay tax on the $50,000.
Well, the $50,000, assuming, well, of course, we'd want to put you on the payroll too,
right,
because
right.
in S corporations, IRS is encouraging you to have a payroll.
So I would get a paycheck every
couple
weeks. You
get a paycheck every couple of weeks, whatever,
yeah.
and
yeah.
depending on the fair value of your services to
right.
your company, that's what determined the payroll. So what happens? After all expenses, including payroll, the profit would pass through to you, and there's a line on your 1040 on the first page of the 1040, which shows income from S corporations and partnerships and
right,
blah,
right,
blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right.
It would show up right there on your personal return as an item of income.
Okay. So here we go.
So he would have two items of income, his paycheck and the
his
profit.
W-2 he'd have mm-hmm. from the company.
And then if there was excess.
And if there was any profit left after, then he'd get that too. So you'd have two elements on your personal return.
Okay, so now I hire a receptionist to take care of the phone because I'm underneath the car all day long, you know, with getting my fingernails dirty. So I don't want to be answering the phone, and that cell phone laying next to me will get awful greasy, right?
Oh, definitely.
So I keep her on a payroll. Let's say I'm paying her $25,000 a year. Let's just
right.
use that as a number. And now I've got me and her, and you're my accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, Joe, okay, you should pay you and your receptionist every twice a month, 15th, 1st and 15th, let's just say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we agree to, right? So then what you're going to do is you're going to tell me every month what?
Well, it depends on how frequently you want your books and records updated. Because
uh-huh.
I have clients that'll come to me with the entire year's activity. Besides payroll, we're not talking payroll.
Right.
It's outside of payroll, because that has to be done quarterly.
Okay.
But the accounting for the tax return
right.
could be done all at once. We don't like that.
Well, let's just say I give you every month. I give
you give me
everything.
You give me everything. You give me your checkbook.
Yeah, my
you
check
give me
register.
Your bank statements.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and so on. What we would do if you engage us to
right,
we could do the bookkeeping for you, which means we would actually enter into like we use QuickBooks. Mostly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you
right,
enter
right.
all the activity
right,
into
right,
QuickBooks,
right,
and
right.
you generate a profit.
Because I don't want to do that. And my receptionist, she's dumb as a stump, so she doesn't know how to do that.
So if people would hire us, or if...
No, wait a minute. Sack of rocks. I got the wrong one. Right. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Oh, they would hire us. But even then, as a client gets bigger, we encourage them to go out and get a full, you know, bookkeeper on site. Because
so
they're cheaper than us.
Yeah.
We're
well,
not
if
the
all of a sudden we were making, if I ended up with 3 or 4 more people working and a lot of business, then we'd hire somebody as a bookkeeper.
Exactly.
Right?
But
okay.
we could fill in the gap for those smaller clients who don't have much
But here, I'm staying small now. I'm working by myself.
Go
I've
ahead.
Got my little garage, one space, and I just work on X, and my receptionist there answers the phone and hits me over the head once in a while, you know, that kind of
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then you... What else? Okay, so now on a monthly basis, I'd give you my checkbook or whatever.
Yeah,
I give
you give me the checkbook, which would be a register of all
whatever.
The checks you wrote. We give us
bank
the bank
statements.
We post all the receipts that you had, the revenues or loans.
Right.
We post all your
okay, then
disbursements.
What?
Then you'd run. Then we'd reconcile your bank.
Okay, then what?
Then we could run a report called a profit and loss statement.
I know, but now don't I have to pay the government every so often?
No,
or so?
Well, we didn't get the payroll. I left that aside for the
okay
because that's. It's different.
Okay.
Payrolls are done quarterly, not
okay.
monthly. IRS and the state of Florida require that you file quarterly tax returns. And depending on how much payroll you have, you might be required to have biweekly or even weekly or even every three day deposits to pay in, to send in money,
okay.
depending on how much you take out.
Right.
Or how much you pay.
Right.
Then every quarter, the end of the month following the quarter end.
Right.
So this quarter is going to be March 31st is the
right.
end. You
yeah,
have
so
to file by
April
30th. April 30th, you
gotcha.
Have to file the return.
Okay.
Then say you have to put the payments in by April 30th.
You got to file.
You have to file. Could be if you're under $2,500 of cumulative liability, you don't have to pay it in, but with the return. They'll let you pay it in on April 30th.
Okay.
If you have more than that, then you should be paying either monthly or by the 15th of
okay.
the third month. It all depends. The rules change depending
but
on the
but
payroll.
You would be telling me or my secretary every month, hey, this is what you need to do, and you'd give me the papers to sign and to send in and with the checks and whatever I need
well,
to do.
Well, we'd give you the coupons that you would need to make those, or what they're doing now is because the electronic age, they're encouraging employers to go online and make their payments.
Good. Okay. So anyway, so that's every 3 months.
Every quarter for the payroll.
Okay. So
and that's both Florida for what they call a reemployment tax. Used to be called unemployment. It's now called reemployment. And then your federal 941.
So I got to pay money to the state for that. mm-hmm. unemployment, then I've got to pay money to pay taxes that are withheld from the paychecks, right?
Correct. You pay the withheld taxes from the paychecks, and you match with the employer's share of Social Security.
So I've got to pay double Social Security on me and half Social Security on the employee.
Correct.
Because she deducts half, and I've got to pay half. Got it. Correct. Okay. So that's done every 3 months. Now, do I have any other reporting that gets done on, let's say, a quarterly basis or a monthly basis?
Well, if you want, it again, it's up to the individual entrepreneur. Some entrepreneurs don't care if they're small enough. They get an idea of what they're making, don't need us to tell them how much they're making or losing. They have a pretty good idea. But some of them do want a full close every month, okay? So we'll give them a profit and loss statement monthly.
What's that mean?
Well, that's the difference between revenues in and expenses out.
Okay, but that basically, if I'm taking a salary, of course, if I'm making too much money and not taking it at the end of the year, that's added on to my income anyway.
Well, as a pass-through entity, as I say, the corporation doesn't pay taxes.
Right.
Everything flows through to you. Now, if you make enough,
right?
Let's say you got the same garage and now he's making $500,000.
Right.
He's got payroll.
And all
other
I'm taking
expenses.
Is a $50,000 salary, and she's taking $25,000. Now it's
I wouldn't encourage that for my clients. If you're making $500,000,
you're
not taking $25,000 in salary.
You got to take a bigger one.
You'd probably be taking $50,000 or $100,000, or it depends, whatever the fair value of your compensation is.
So you want to get it so I'm not all of a sudden at the end of the year with a big whomping chunk of change that I got to pay tax
on. No, part of we do this is we project for clients. Usually at the end of the year, we'll come sit down with the clients, see what they've done in the past year. We'll project the future. And then we try to come up with a payment plan for estimated taxes.
Now, what if he's only paying himself $50,000 a year? The company's made this profit that you're suggesting that he should take. Does the company pay the tax on it?
No, the company doesn't. But here's the thing, Pastor, is that because you've earned that money, now you haven't paid yourself in salary. You've taken it out basically in distributions. Distributions are taxable.
But if I don't
take it. But as long as he leaves it in the company.
No, on a pass-through, it matters not whether you leave it in the company. You're paying
tax. So on the S-Corp, it would pass through.
Passes through. The LLC, it passes through.
So he ends up paying it anyway.
He ends up paying the tax. But worse, if you make that much money, IRS may come back at you and say, here it is April 15th. You want to pay all the tax on April 15th. And they say, nat. You should have been paying it in on the quarters.
Yeah.
So you're going to pay
fine. You're going to pay a penalty
for
that.
Yeah. Because you're supposed to be filing quarterly, are you not?
You're supposed to file quarterly personal deposits.
Yeah.
And you make quarterly payroll deposits for your company.
So if he's paying himself the check and he's got that quarterly profit that's showing up each month, that passes through, he should be paying tax on that quarterly as well.
He should be estimating the year.
Estimated.
Now, could we estimate the year and divide by four because they don't always have that even spread.
Not every quarter is going to be the same. Right?
But you try to do it as best you can to estimate the total. And if there's so be it that the – and then you got other – you know, there's so many nuances here. I mean, if all your profits came in the last quarter, you could argue that they didn't have to pay it in the first
quarter. And if somebody listening today has a question about this, you can call us here at the station, toll-free, 888-221-8990. If you've got questions about business today, this would be a good time to give us a ring. Toll free.
888-221-8990.
There you go.
Mutt and Jeff, here
Mutt
we go.
And Jeff.
I don't know which one is which, but Burl Ives, you know, you're getting skinny.
I am.
How much extra weight have you lost?
I have lost since October 33 pounds.
Wow.
That's impressive.
That is very impressive.
That is impressive. I only lost 12. I'm jealous.
I only gained 6. Lord.
I'm drinking a lot of juice.
Well, you know, but juice has got it's got sugar in it, right?
Some of it does.
Some juice, like apple juice.
Apple.
But it's not processed orange. Sugar, so it's not
But
so
it's
bad.
Still. It's still. You can gain weight.
It all goes through the juicer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can gain weight. Like, I love watermelon, but I found out that's full of sugar.
Is that right? 1-888-221-8990.
That's why I love it.
888-221-8990. The reason I wanted to bring this up, because a lot of people, they want to go into a business, but they really don't know all of the fine details in the reporting, because it just seems like I'm signing some kind of report constantly that I've got to send to the state or to the federal government. And I leave it up to my accountant to make sure that that stuff is in front of me. And my accountant goes to such an extreme to highlight, puts a stamp on it, says, okay, dummy, sign it here. Don't screw up this time again. We're getting tired of you making mistakes. isn't quite that bad.
Isn't quite that bad. But yeah, we try to make it easy for people when we give them the instructions on what to do.
Give them instructions on what to do.
I do it like dummy proof. I try to make it
dummy proof. Well, listen, some things are just not fun for some people.
And this is one of them.
You know, there's some parts of every business that are individual people enjoy, and some parts they don't enjoy. So literally, I think most businesses, a man might be good at fixing a car, or he might be good at.
I've never seen anybody say, "Oh boy, I get to send off money to the feds today."
Yeah, I just can't wait to sign that form and make sure it's filled out right.
Well, you know, some people refer to us as the necessary evils, but. You know, hey, we're only getting you in compliance with the law. We don't make the laws. We just set you to comply with them as best we can.
Most people don't like the idea of being in trouble with state or federal agencies. They just don't like that idea. You know, like if the IRS knocks on the door, that doesn't usually make you happy.
Now, when a business out there acquires the services of a CPA, what kind of responsibility? Do you have a fiduciary responsibility?
Well, we do. As CPAs, of course, we're governed by our own ethics, and so, yes, we do have fiduciary responsibility, and also IRS puts us trying even more every year to put more and more responsibility on our backs. For example, you know, we're not obligated to audit our clients' information, but if we see something that looks totally outrageous, and I think I told you the story about a client who had made about $150,000 a year, and he had $40,000 of contributions to his church. And I said, all right, are you tithing? Still a lot of money. He said, no. I said, well, what is this? And he said, well, come with me and I'll show you. Well, what happened was he took me down to his local church and he's up on the wall. He shows me this big mural, the metallic, actually, I don't know what you call it, a mural. It was a metallic. It was a picture of Mother Mary and Jesus and it was up on the side, up there. And I said, he said, you see that? I said, yeah. He said, I paid for that. I donated that to the church. He says, oh, really? I said, okay. I said, not for nothing, but he says, and then he offers, because I didn't want it. He says, he offers, you want to talk to the pastor? I says, yeah, I'd like that. So we knocked on the door. Pastor comes to the door, and we told him what was going on. He says, oh, yeah, he donated that. I said, can you give him that in writing? And he said, absolutely. I'll send a letter to you. I'll tell you what he did. So he did. Pastor did. And so what I did on a tax return that year is I actually took pictures. I had a cell phone. I took pictures of this thing. We put the picture and the letter and attached it to his tax return to just preempt any question as to this amount, because it was large compared to his income.
Yeah, if you look at too much money be going, you wonder why, you know, obviously.
Because it's an area where it's abused, Joe.
Of course.
There's a lot of people who abuse the charitable contributions line, you know, especially cash contributions.
Of course, you know. Yeah. On their receipts.
Well, they've changed the rules on how you report that now that you have to have dates and receipts.
Particularly if it's $500 or more, you have some requirement to put down who you gave it to and their.
And a lot of people are calling me now wanting their receipts from the station for the whole year.
And sorry, Pastor.
But you know, that's the service that we provide. Whenever they make a donation, we send them a receipt immediately, but sometimes they'll call up, well, you know, I can't find them. Where are they? And we're glad to provide receipts to the people. But, you know, a lot of rules have changed on that, on how you can do
that. It's true. And Joe mentioned about the fiduciary responsibility. The point there was, if we would just accept that from a client without asking the question, and they got audited and it got banged, they could come back to us and say, you should have known, could have known, you should have asked the question.
And it used to be, you know, if you went to church and you know that you gave an average of, you know, $50 a week cash to the church, you put $50, you could write that off. You can't do that anymore because you've got to have it in a check. You got to have a receipt.
That's right.
You can't just say, well, I gave, you know, $600 this past year in cash.
What about if you went back to the pastor and said, hey, you know, I come here every week and put a $50 bill in that thing. Would you give me a receipt?
They can give you a receipt.
Yeah, then you'd be.
But if you put it in cash, how does he know it was your
$50? How does he know for sure?
He doesn't. And so that's why, within reason, Pastor, usually those things will not get tampered with. And I say, if you put in $500 because you $10 a week you dump into the plate, and if you take $500, nobody's really going to challenge you on that.
No.
But if you take $40,000,
they're going to know.
That's not something you dump cash in the bucket.
Well, there's rules. And what I was trying to lead into was, if when somebody has a business, in order to do all the necessary reporting, it isn't just once a year that you have to do a tax return. It's if you do this thing properly. And if you don't do it properly, the state's going to come down on you. I mean, I know a fellow that went to jail for not paying sales tax, because that's, as far as the state is concerned, that's not your money. That's the state's money given by this customer. And just because you didn't pay it, you stole that money from the state. So he went to jail.
Now, well, it gets worse on a federal level, Joe, because, you know, when you withhold taxes
right.
from an employee,
right.
we talked about how an employer matches Social Security, they match Medicare. So they take from the employee this, their piece of the Social Security, and then they match. And the combined amounts become the liability.
Right.
Well, IRS says if you don't pay the withholding part,
from the client,
because that's not employee, your money. You don't pay. You took it from your employee, and you haven't remitted it to us. That is a liability that attaches to you personally.
Sure.
If you're considered a responsible person,
right?
Whoever the responsible person is, they could go after them for those taxes.
And that responsible person could be two or three people in the same company.
That's correct. It could be the president. It could be the CFO,
secretary, treasurer,
whoever who's got management responsibilities and authorities to call the shots.
There you go.
Who gets paid and who doesn't get paid?
But I'm back to this one person with one employee. So I know I've got to file quarterly. Mm-hmm. I know I've got to file with the state. Now, doesn't the
and the feds?
And doesn't the state also, once a year, want to know about how much stuff you've got?
Yeah, there's something called a tangibles tax, Joe.
Yeah.
I think in Martin County now, I think they're up to the $50,000 as an exemption for smaller businesses. You still have to file for the exemption, and then they send you a card that says you've been exempt from this tangible tax because you don't have enough equipment on hand.
So there's what I'm looking at, all of these different pieces of paper and stuff that has to go in on an annual basis.
And let's not forget about sales tax, Joe.
Little minor thing,
sales tax.
That goes, how often do you have to file sales tax?
Sales tax is usually quarterly.
Quarterly,
it could
too.
Be more frequently depending on how much you're
But if I'm collecting. Operating this garage, I've got to charge sales tax.
Yeah, for repairs, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And so you've got to monitor that. Probably more likely monthly you're going to be making those deposits
for
sales tax.
Yeah.
And you're going to file quarterly. So you got all these things, and you're right. There are a lot of filing requirements.
So now I'm a brand new business, and I look at you as a CPA, and I said, okay, how much are you going to charge me for all this stuff?
Well, there's without going into details, I'd be happy anybody out there that wanted to talk to me about it, I'd review their situation.
Because everybody's a little different.
Everyone is different, and you know, I've got people who, like I said, draw one check a month, and we do the bookkeeping. Other people do 10, 20 checks a month, and it's more
time. So the more time you have to put in.
The more time, the more expensive. And then there's a baseline that we have to charge no matter what.
Well, you've got people that you have to pay in your office and you.
And I got overhead.
I mean, I know that, you know, you're trying to lose weight, so you can afford to skip a couple meals, but.
I still have other overhead, you know? I've got to pay rent. I got to pay utilities.
Little minor.
My employees.
Little minor things.
When you service a client, do you have to have all their receipts and. I mean,
Pastor, as I said before, we're not obligated to audit the numbers. So if somebody came with a credit card and they say, well, this is office supplies and this is auto and this is this, we'll normally take their, if they're doing the coding, not us,
right.
and we try not to do the coding, we don't want the responsibility for that, then we're not going to, unless it's something odd and we don't know what it is, we'll call them and we'll say, what is this? And they'll tell us, and we'll code it appropriately.
But the individual client should keep those receipts.
Definitely, because for up to 3 years after you file a tax return, the IRS in particular has the ability to audit.
For a business or an individual?
Both.
Only 3 years?
3 years, 6 years if they catch a fraud. So if they come in and audit you for 1 year and they discover that there's a fraud, they could go back 6 years on the Fed level. I'm not quite sure what the state level is for, like, sales tax and that thing.
I think I could check that, though. I think most of us keep these records forever. I don't know why, because we should throw them
away.
But, you know, they just keep getting stacked up. It's something that 40 years ago, I'm still got stuff in the garage, you know, that I've been.
I've been guilty of that.
Yeah,
I think I have the very first tax return I ever filed. I was 16 years old. I didn't do it. My father had a tax preparer, and they did it in those days. They did it manually.
Yeah.
And it was done in pencil. I mean, my copy was pencils. I guess the one that went into the government was pen, but then he copied everything down on a second sheet and gave it back. Yeah, that was your copy.
They didn't have a copy machine, right?
No, that was before copy machines.
1-888-221-8990.
I hate to admit that.
Well, you know, this old age was better than carbon paper, you know, and you get it.
In Joe's days, it was before they had pencils.
That's true.
Well, Methuselah and I, brothers, you know, that's nothing serious. Well, we had chunks of charcoal we used to use.
Joe was one of the original occupants on the Ark.
Yeah. On the Ark, right? Anyway, I won't tell you which flavor. Anyway, 1-888-221-8990, 1-888-221-8990. You know, it's just been kind of interesting. We've had some really, really good phone calls and some people we're helping, and I've got some people right now that I'm kind of helping. You know, what we take for granted, Vince, you know, other people, I've got one particular person that listens, and they're talking about going to an attorney, and then they're paying money every month, and they're losing their house. And I says, so what kind of paperwork do you have? She goes, I don't know. I've got a whole bunch of it. So I said, well, just send it to me. Let me look at it. Well, wouldn't you know, it's a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, which nobody had ever, if they explained it to her, it's gone. You know, because, I mean, who in the world knows about a 13? Most people, when you say the word bankruptcy, most people think, okay, we walk in, we don't have to pay anymore. That's called a 7. But an 11 and a 13 basically says, no, we're agreeing to pay you, or somehow we'll work a program out. And they're just different. But the average person,
those 11s and 13s are more reorganization of debt.
That's exactly.
It's not an elimination of debt, per se.
It's a renegotiation.
It's a renegotiation of the debt.
And a payment plan. And the government agrees to the payment plan. And
your creditors, not just the government.
Everybody. Everybody has to agree. And the court system agrees, and it's a filing. Anyway, there's some things that, you know, you don't see very often. But unfortunately, it's like this. We were talking about that simple IRA a few weeks ago. I mean, you know, boy, you should see the paperwork that comes through on that thing that we had to end up filling out to try to figure this thing out.
It's complex. It's not that easy. And somebody comes in and they want to open up one of these things. The simple answer is to describe what it is.
Right.
But then when you go to do the actual paperwork, i.e. applying for a 501c3 certification.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, what about ministries, charitable organizations, shelters for battered women, all those kind of things that would be 501c3, are their reports required, the same quarterly reports and things
that they have for employees and payroll? Absolutely. Yeah. They're no different than anybody else. In fact, they're exempt, but they're not always exempt for everything. There's something called unrelated business.
They're exempt income from payment of taxes, but they're not exempt necessarily. Because they still have to, if they have employees, they got to pay in the taxes for their employees, match them, Social Security, all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You don't escape that because you're in ministry, no.
Yeah.
No.
Somebody, hey, listen, pastors get paid, remember?
Well, there are special exceptions for
the
pastors.
The local church may provide a 1099 to the pastor,
that's right,
and he's responsible for his own taxes.
Of course he is.
That's right.
But an organization like this, you know, we have employees, and they take out our taxes each week. And,
exactly, just, you know, like any other business.
Like any other business. But I was just wondering if the reporting procedure is different.
No, they actually file the same returns on the payrolls. They're no different than any other employer in that sense. Mm-hmm. They're employers.
But federal tax, I mean, for the
federal income tax? We're talking income tax?
Well, for the taxes that the ministry itself might owe, you know, like if you have a LLC, they might have to pay taxes on the corporation, might have to pay some taxes. But if you were a 501c3, does that 501c3 have to file paperwork even though it may not pay the tax?
Absolutely. The federal government does not let any operating entity, especially one that applied for a 501c3 status, do not report. You do report every year on a Form 990. There is a 990 EZ form that you can file, but every not-for-profit has to file something with the state and with the feds.
Is that a new requirement? Because I know some of the smaller churches that had tax exemption status never filed any paperwork at all, but they, I guess the reason they didn't do that is because the local properties were actually owned by a larger denominational group. The denomination may have filed.
Maybe the other entity did.
Well, you got to account for the money coming in the door. You know, there's all it amounts to. What are you doing with that money? You bring in $1 million a year into this nonprofit. What are you doing with that $1 million? Now, if 400,000 goes out to help people in the community, that's good. If 100,000 goes for salaries, okay, that money has to be accounted for and taxes have to be paid on that. Mm-hmm. You know, the withholding, the Social Security.
But I've heard rumors that 501c ministries, churches in particular, are not required to open their books to the public or to anyone.
I'm not sure. I couldn't answer that. I don't know that to be
whether they're to be the public or not. But I would bet anything that the Infernal has to.
Infernal could come in and ask.
They could ask,
but is it required that they?
I couldn't say that they. I don't know for sure, but I would say that the IRS is not going to allow you to keep your books closed. No. Otherwise, how do they verify
like I said,
the information?
That's a rumor I heard. I don't know.
Yeah, I would. I have a hard time believing the Internal Revenue would say just because you're an approved charity, you don't have to account.
You don't have to account, and we don't have the right to come and ask you to prove.
Yeah.
The expenditures
they,
of that.
I think they do. I think they do. 1-888-221-8991, 888-221-8990. I just thought it's kind of not a normal subject that we're talking about on the radio, but I know there's a whole bunch of people that are small business people, average business people, and there's reporting and there's forms, but especially somebody that's thinking about starting a new business, they need to understand that it isn't just, hey, just I can just put a sign out on the door and I can start making money and not taking it and do, because there are reports that need to be done.
Well, you know, Joe, you're absolutely right. I think what happens is people don't understand that there is another side to their business.
Yeah.
There's what you do, and then there's the backup and support for what you do.
There you go.
And so they think, I'm out there. I'm this. I'm the roofer. I'm this. I'm that electrician, whatever. I do all that. And so I come and I give you my piece of paper, and here's what I made. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And so there's so many considerations. So that's why I encourage people to find a professional that they can trust, and work with that professional when they're thinking about starting the business,
yeah,
or when they actually do, and before you actually elect anything, whether you're going to elect to be an S corp or you want to be an LLC or whatever. Talk to a professional.
Now, pretty much, isn't an LLC and the S corp very similar today, and how the monies are passed through?
They're both passed through entities. Yeah. I mean, let's just say for all intents and purposes, yes, but not necessarily. There are tax differences.
Yeah.
But I can't get into that now.
No. Well, each individual person. Then you have to look at each individual
type of business.
Yeah.
You know what? Whether they're making money, losing money.
Right.
Because you mentioned sole proprietorship. Is there any advantage for being a sole proprietor?
Well, advantages, I would say, I don't know of any. I mean, that you get the same tax deductions that I'm aware, you know, that you get in the business.
I think some people would think if I'm a sole proprietor, that gives me a little more credibility with the public.
Well, there's two things. There's the marketing aspect to it, but then there's the legalities of it. And for example, I'll give you an example. Somebody came and said, well, I want to incorporate. Oh, yeah, real why? Well, I heard it was a good thing to do. And I said, what do you do? He says, I'm a psychologist. Oh. And you want to incorporate why? Well, just in case somebody sues me. And okay. So, well, guess what? Corporation veils or corporate veils don't protect you against acts of malfeasance in a professional services organization. So you could have as much corporate protection as you think you need, but it won't help you if somebody proves that you had an act of malpractice and they sue you and they win.
But if a carpenter left a screwdriver somewhere and somebody stepped on it,
that's a different scenario. That would be covered by workers' comp insurance, or you would cover
liability.
With your liability
but
policy.
If there was any liability, it would be the business, not the
you
private
personally.
Individual.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's the same thing as your homeowner's insurance. Your homeowner's insurance doesn't protect you from fraud or stealing or theft
or flood.
But it does.
That's
but
right.
But your liability, if somebody slips and falls or gets hurt on your property, and they decide to sue you, then they're there to to be your partner and
to protect you up to that limit.
Up to
the limit.
Mm-hmm. Well, then other people, you know, there comes another thing. You know, when you start a new business, and that's one of the questions that you got to talk to your CPA about. It's called insurance. You know, I've got to have liability insurance, and who should I talk to about that? Well, that's why we have Dan Warren around. Because different kinds of business are charged.
And how much should I have?
Well, there you go. are different rates. But it's also called, you know, when you're starting off a brand new business, and let's say you don't have any assets to speak of and the business doesn't have, you may not have real high liability limits and you may not pay a lot. But let's just say all of a sudden you've been successful for a period of time and now you're worth $1 million. Well, you better have higher liability limits, because when an attorney finds out you got $1 million, they may think, let me find a way to get it.
And it goes in his other aspects to it, Joe. If you're making that kind of money, I always ask the clients, do you have a will?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first line of defense. Do you have a will in case something happens to you that the state doesn't step in, A, for probate purposes, and secondly, for distribution of your money?
There you go.
And so somebody said, well, it doesn't really matter because I have, it's my wife and I.
Uh-huh.
And if I die, she gets everything. And if she dies, I get everything. What do I need a will? I mean, what do I need a trust? This was all in the connection with a trust.
I said,
well, you know what? I said, what happens if, God forbid, you're both driving down 95 and some big 18-wheeler runs right over you, and you're both gone in an instant?
That's it.
Well, I didn't think about that.
A little minor thing. Well, from now on, I'm not taking her with me.
Well, listen, we've only got about 15 minutes or less today. If you have a question, the number to call here today, toll-free, 888-221-8990.
Now, I had one that just happened to me, which, back again, we take things for granted. But I've got this particular couple, and they are not married. They have no children. They've been together 30-some years, and his health is not good. So he's very concerned about medical bills getting extremely high for him and then her liability. So I said, well, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I understand in the state of Florida, you're not responsible for the debts of anybody that you don't sign for. But if you sign for them, and Pastor, you and I have had this conversation, if you sign for them, you're now liable. So I said, hey, just tell her if you go in a hospital and you're dying, don't sign for you. You know, you're on your own. That's it. Well, on the other hand, what happened is he's got a substantial IRA, substantial, big, couple hundred thousand dollars in an IRA. And I said, okay, who gets that money in case you die? Or forget the in case, when? It's no in case. He says, she does. And I said, let me tell you right now, you're looking at $60,000 in tax all of a sudden, boom, that she has to pay on that money because she's not your spouse. And I said, you guys have to get married.
Right.
I mean, this is a pure business decision. Get married now, and that way you go ahead and die anytime you want.
What a prenup.
She'd be in much better shape in a number of ways if you went ahead and got married now.
Well, she would end up inheriting that IRA, and it's hers, and there's no tax unless he had already started taking money out. But under their circumstance, he's not taking money. So she'd inherit it at her age, and she'd have to start taking money out according to the rules, which means when she turned 70 and a half, she'd have to start taking it. But no tax.
Right.
Big, big difference.
Absolutely.
The other side of the coin, too, and it's back to this counseling again, how we talk. They own a couple pieces of property. Are they in both of your names? He says, well, I think so. I said, well, you need to check on that, too, because, Tom, you and I can own a piece of property together. Joe Martek, Pastor Tom, we own it together. I die, guess what? My half goes to my estate. So that half of the property, my kids move into your half, my half, and kick, you know, and they make life really miserable for you.
But, Joe, you know, with that, it depends on how it's held.
That's
if it's
exactly
jointly held or tenants in common. Because tenants in common, and I'm no lawyer, I just recollect what I was told, that the tenants in common are actually your own half, literally half, and your half goes to whomever you designate.
Well, that's your estate.
And your estate. So now all of a sudden the other person who's the other tenant in common has got a new partner.
That's my point. So what happens is you look at your title on your deed in the state of Florida. If you're married, it says husband and wife on there. If it says that, you die, it's hers. She dies, it's yours. If you're not married and it's just Pastor Tom and I, and we both like each other, and we want, if I die, it goes to him, I have to put JTWROS on the title. Joint tenants with rights of survivorship. JTWROS. Mm. That way, I die, it's yours, you die, it's mine.
Correct.
Now,
or you do tenants in common.
Or you do a tenants in common.
And that means that it doesn't go to the other person. It's literally two pieces of property.
Yep.
And the one person owns the other. And by the way, the other person owns the other.
In the state of Florida, you don't have to put anything to have a tenants in common. Because then the state would automatically assume if there's two names that it's a 50-50 ownership. And I die, my half goes to my estate, which is going to cause you nothing but trouble. So
all of a sudden, you wind up with a new partner.
Yeah, boy.
Venture.
Yeah, boy. So there's lots of little things that we take for granted that we really need to talk about from time to time so people can check. So all I suggest to everybody, if you're married, just check your deed, check your tax return, your tax bill from the county. If you can't find either one, you call them up and find out, or go down there and say, hey, how is it titled? Because we have seen it happen where they weren't titled properly. And it's real simple to do it. It's nothing.
I looked on, after you had mentioned that before, I looked on my tax bill.
Right.
It didn't say that. And so I went online in St. Lucie County, looked at the deed, and it came up, and it gave me a lot of rest because I found that it did indeed say, you know,
husband and wife.
Husband and wife.
Good. So, you know, the key was, if you can, and again, it's all public records. It's not hard to find out. It's just a matter of taking the time to do it, and it's a smart thing to do. 1-888-221-8990, 1-888-221-8990. I'm going to talk a little bit. How much time we got left, Pastor Tom?
You've got about 8 minutes.
That's a long time. I'm going to talk about money just a little bit. And one of my favorite things going is exchange-traded debt. Oh, by the way, new subject. You just reminded me. You know, we're talking 529 plans. You know, people that have babies and grandbabies and stuff, and they want to put money in. And, of course, our illustrious president just wanted to tax you for it, but he's changed his mind now.
Did you hear what Congress did?
They didn't like it.
No, it's not that they didn't like it. They came back with a bill to expand the 529 program.
Good. Now, but I heard something else. That was 529 plans, folks, so you don't know, or if you do know, you're allowed to put money aside for education for your children or grandchildren. And there's tax advantages to this because you can put the money aside. And then when you take the money out, you're not paying any tax on the money as long as it's used for education. And there's certain limits, 200 and some thousand, 300 and some thousand, depending on the school. But it's not important to know exactly. But I heard of a wrinkle that I liked better. The Roth IRA. If you took $6,000 a year for 18 years, you'd have $225,000 based at 5% per year. And one of the problems with most of the 529s, they control the investments, which is a problem. We got a caller. I'm going to take it. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio. Very good. Thank you. She was talking.
I have a question in regards to a mortgage payment.
There you go.
Yeah,
Pastor Tom just took care of this phone for me. Hang on.
I was originally with another mortgage.
Okay.
Another mortgage company took over. But now, instead of paying the first of the month, the mortgage is due the 29th. Is that legal?
Good question.
Because it's considered late if it's after the 29th for the following month.
But don't they give you like 15-day grace in that you can make the payment within without paying a late charge?
They should, but not with this mortgage company.
Is that right? You know, what happens is when you signed your original documents, you have a note and a mortgage, and that mortgage might have been sold to a different company. That note might have gone through different people, but it should have the exact terms and the exact dates written on that piece of paper, on that stuff. So if you can find your original closing papers, if you cannot find them, if you went to a title insurance company or an attorney, whoever did your closing for you when you bought the property, they may have a copy of that. But once you find out what it,
that info.
Yeah, they would. You should find out the exact, it should all be in writing exactly what you're supposed to do and when and how much.
From the previous mortgage company.
Whoever, when you bought your house and you got that mortgage, you have not refinanced it since that time, have you?
No, I have not.
Okay, so the original one that you signed, all those documents have dates and amounts and everything in there, and it should say exactly what the terms are. And the fact they changed it to the 29th, it may have been the 29th originally. It doesn't make sense to me, but you need to just find out what it is before you get too worried. I'd look it up first.
Okay, thanks.
You're quite welcome. I hope that helps you. It doesn't answer the question, but it might be a little more work. 1-888-221-8990. Anyway, I was just kind of thinking about a Roth IRA. One things I liked about it, as opposed to the 529, you control the investments. Whereas the 529 plans, each one has a different set of rules on how the money is invested, and you cannot change that.
It's true. Although some are more flexible than others.
Some are more flexible.
Some are like age-weighted where they change your investment portfolio over the years, but they're pretty much in control, yes.
That's what. So anyway, and that was one of my negatives on 529s, that you don't have that control. But I do know this. If you could put $6,000 a year aside for 18 years, you end up with $225,000 if you earn 5% per year.
All right, that's pretty good.
And that's the bottom line.
And you take it out tax-free.
There you go. So the Roth IRA works extremely well, especially if you're the grandparent. Not that I know any grandparents that just had a grandbaby.
Yes. And not that I want to put that away, but we will be putting it away.
Well,
but, you know, it's interesting. The administration wanted to basically...
Expand it.
No. The administrator wanted to get rid of it, basically, and
tax people on the existing
things, which is terrible. But they backed off.
Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. I was hoping you could clarify the rule for 1040 for long-form filing with, I believe it's Schedule D, you know, for if you have charitable contributions and mortgage interest.
That's Schedule A.
But Schedule A?
Schedule A.
So the sales tax from the state that you live in, like the state of Florida, all those receipts over the year is also, you're able to take some form of deduction, and you have to keep those receipts. Can you help?
Yeah, the Congress gave a big benefit to people who live in non-income taxed states,
allowing you to take that.
So, like for example, Texas and Florida and Nevada and Wyoming and a few other states don't have an income tax. So, what the Congress allowed us to do is to take a tax deduction for the sales tax that are paid, and usually it's based on a formula on income. So they figure out what your income is, and they go to a table that the IRS has calculated. And said, okay, this based on your locality, your tax rate, this is what we think you spent on average. And they give you an amount. And then you deduct that. Now, if you happen to have excessive things, like you bought a car or something like that.
More expensive.
Then you can itemize those and take those as additional.
But they give you a standard deduction based on your income.
Right.
So you don't have to keep all the receipts. But like Vince said, let's say you bought a $100,000 boat or car or something that year.
You want to hang on
to that receipt for sure. Does that make sense?
Okay. For clarifying, yes. So if you do the Schedule A, the IRS has a table based on, like you said, income.
Yes.
And where you live to.
And what county?
If you do the PA, they're gonna calculate that point.
Exactly, and you don't have to have receipts. But if you have an unusual expense, you know, then you best keep the receipts.
Thank you very much for your help.
You're
welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for calling.
If you finance a car, you can take the whole
sales tax. Sure.
Sales tax for the purchase price of the car,
if it's considered a purchase lease, in other words,
if you purchase it,
if it's a real purchase,
it's not a lease. Yeah, if you lease it, they change sales tax every month. 1-888-221-8990. We don't have time for any more calls, but you call the radio station. Pastor Tom or Connie will take your name and number and have us call you back. 1-888-221-8990. But if anybody has any more questions about that Roth IRA and setting money aside. The nice thing about the Roth, and that's where it really started to make sense to me, where a grandparent or a parent can put $6,000 or $5,000 or $7,000 a year aside, and then when that child goes to college, it's all tax-free. And if they don't go to college, they can take the money and do anything they want with it. There's no restrictions.
No, but you would be taxed on... on the Roth, you wouldn't be taxed at all.
No, Roth, you're not taxed.
Doesn't matter, right?
No,
there's no restrictions. But on the 529, there is.
I know. But see, that's why I think
that's an excellent point.
I got it. 1-888-221-8990. Pastor Thomas saying we need to be quiet and leave. Goodbye until next week. Thank you so much.
Bye, all.
Bless you all.
God bless.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martek program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martek is available at 772 229-0114.
Sing your praises in adoration. We lift our voices and as we honor
This is WCNO, Palm